Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Wednesday edition of Sports Time Radio, and I'm the Big Jack. Hey, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email me, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, since it is Wednesday, the new blog went up this morning, so you can get yourself over there, check that out. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, swing on over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. Don't forget, there's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is, come on, you know it by now, it's at Sports Time Radio. Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man, with me.
Yeah, I had one more change to make to my fantasy football lineup this week, and I couldn't quite get finished, so I'm making my last pickup now for the auction league. I had a guy go on IR, so obviously I don't need him because he's not coming back this year. So, yeah, I was like, come on, I can make it. I got time. No, I didn't have enough time, so... All right, there you go. I managed to get that all done, and I am all set now pretty much for the week. But let's go ahead and talk about last night, Dan. The Dodgers get the first game in the series. You know, they win it 3-1. It was a fantastic game. All the runs were scored on home runs. You know, Chris Taylor hit the first pitch he saw for a solo shot in the first for the Dodgers. Bregman tied it up for the Astros with a solo shot, and then Justin Turner wins it with a two-run bomb. You know, the question I keep hearing all day, you know, and I figure we'll start with this on you here, Dan. Did Clayton Kershaw get the playoff monkey off his back with this start?
I think it's blatantly obvious, isn't it? He goes about 7 innings. I only give up the one hit, the one run. Well, 3 hits, the one run. I don't believe he lost anybody, and he tied Sandy Koufax's record since 1965 for 11 Ks in a postseason game. Granted, I'm sure Koufax finished the game, though, but that was the era.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's how it used to be there. You didn't go to the bullpen then. The guys wanted to go out there and, not that Kershaw didn't want to finish, they just don't let guys finish anymore.
At the same token, though, with it being a 7-game series, he's your first starter. I'd rather let him go all out on the next game.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not saying he should have been, you know, ran back out there. It's just kind of like, you know, I get it. It's just how... you know, how baseball is now, you know, they don't really get the opportunities to go out there and do those kind of things. Again, like I said, not that he didn't want to keep going. And oddly, you know, neither guy even got to 90 pitches. I think why I don't have the box score in front of me. I'd see if I can pull it up here real quick. But I think 1 through 84 and 1 through 86 pitches. So they were, you know, they both worked very, you know, very well. They were able to conserve pitches and, you know, throw strikes and, you know, keep the game, you know, kind of rolling along. So, you know, neither guy should have any arm fatigue, depending on when they want to bring him back. You know, it's been kind of proven through his playoff history that Kershaw pitches better on normal rest. So you would think the Dodgers, it was actually Kershaw through 83 and Keuchel through 84. You know, we've seen Kershaw in 3 days rest in the postseason before. It hasn't really worked out. So you got to think, especially getting a win in game one, that he'll stay on normal rest now, and we'll see him again in, that'll probably be what, game five?
Mm-hmm.
Would be my guess. So, you know, and Keuchel too, you know, there's no huge reason to rush them back. I mean, I'm sure both will be available in relief in game four if needed. But yeah, I would assume we're gonna get the same start for, you know, for game five, we'll get the same starters. So yeah, just kind of, you know, like I said, a you know, very, very well pitched game. You know, Keuchel really good considering he only struck out three. You know, he did work around six hits. Now, two of those hits were home runs, but, you know, I thought he was very good as well. You know, I mean, he was obviously just overshadowed by a much better outing by Kershaw, but, you know, with just a tad bit of offense, we might be talking about how great Keuchel pitched instead, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was able to watch all of 2 hours and 28 minutes. Of the record game. And I mean, Keuchel looked just as good, you know, like you said, he just two bad pitches. Really was the difference. And I wouldn't even say
yeah, and you know,
before they were
yeah, and you know, and to be fair, you know, if it's 10 degrees cooler, Turner's ball doesn't get out. You know, that's a fly out the left field. If it's, you know, 93 instead of 103, or, you know, however that works out, you know, the ball flies better when it's warmer like that. And Turner needed just about every inch of that heat to get that 2-run homer. But, you know, those are the kind of, you know, kind of things that, you know, happen. You know, it's a lot of, oh, you can always say if this or if that, and, you know, Turner himself even admitted it. You know, Taylor's ball was going out no matter where it was hit. You know, that ball was a bomb, and Bregman's ball was going to get out. You know, they were just a couple. You know, Bregman's was a mistake. I think Turner may have kind of ambushed Keuchel, you know, or maybe nerves got to him being game one of the World Series, because that was kind of a, not really a BP fastball, but it was about 88 miles, 89 miles an hour, kind of right down the middle of the plate. And I'm just wondering if maybe he thought he wasn't going to swing being the first at bat of the first game like that. But yeah, he hit that ball a long way for you know, what you would look at as a smaller guy compared to some of the home run hitters in baseball now.
Yeah. I mean, even like you mentioned with Turner's home run, initially, I didn't even think it was good enough.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people who, you know, kind of thought that same thing, that it was kind of like, well, wait, is this, you know, how close is this going to be? And it was right there. I mean, it was definitely a real close home run, but, you know, in the end it got out, and, you know, you turn that game over to the Dodger bullpen, and it's just, that's just the end of things. You know, I mean, last night they needed an inning out of Brandon Morrow. No problems there. And then Kenley Jansen, you know, came in to wrap things up, picked up a strikeout. You know, the biggest positive for the Astros may be the fact that their bullpen went an inning and a third without giving up a run. You know, Brad Peacock did walk a guy, but Davinsky struck out two of the three guys he faced. So, you know, that may be something, because obviously, you know, we talked a little bit about starters today. Maybe not the Astros so much tonight with Justin Verlander on the mound, but he is coming off of a lot of innings and a lot of pitches, so maybe that bullpen factors in. But you damn well know the Dodgers are going to their bullpen right away, because, you know, if they get six innings out of Rich Hill, they're lucky, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, but if you go five, if he at least goes five, he's got Cingrani, Watson, Morrow, and Jansen, if they choose to go that way.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing, you know, like my guess is, yeah, you know, my guess kind of be, we'll see Hill for probably five, as long as he's going well. You know, if he's going really good, maybe you get a sixth inning out of him. But I won't be surprised if, like, Kenta Maeda is the first guy out and they see if maybe they can get two innings out of him. You know, obviously as a starter, that's nothing for him. And he's been fantastic. He kind of understands the role of coming out and just blowing guys away as a starter in the bullpen now. So, you know, that wouldn't surprise me at all. But, yeah, I don't see Hill making it past five or six. And, you know, I'll be interested to see how Verlander holds up. I mean, he's been fantastic. But I believe the last time he was out was that complete game outing he had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously that, you know, that can be taxing on guys. But, you know, I mean, he's Justin Verlander. It's the World Series. He's not going to make any excuses. He's going to go out there and, you know, just kind of lay it on the line. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, what do you think he's going today? I mean, is he going to give them seven or eight? Is he going to roll out like that and just kind of crush it?
I think so. I mean, the performance that he's had since coming to Houston has just been phenomenal. And, I mean, he looks great. So I don't think anything falters unless, of course, you know, he gives up, you know, back-to-back-to-back home runs.
Yeah.
Turner, Bellinger, Puig, you know.
So, yeah, and they do have the lineups released. What I noticed is the Astros lineup is exactly the same. They didn't change a thing. We still have it's George Springer leading off in center, Alex Bregman batting second at third base, Jose Altuve batting third at second, Carlos Correa in the cleanup spot at shortstop, Urieski Gurriel at first base. He hits fifth. Brian McCann does the catching, hitting sixth. Marwin Gonzalez is in left field again, hitting seventh. Josh Reddick stays in the eighth spot. He'll play right field. And then the pitcher, Verlander, is ninth. Are you surprised they didn't make a shuffle or maybe one change at all?
No, I mean, what could you really change?
Well, you know, they still have the right-handed Evan Gattis on the bench to face the lefty Hill. And they also have, you know, the right-handed Cameron Maben. You know,
yeah,
that they could have plugged in for, you know, either Brian McCann or possibly, you know, Marwin Gonzalez.
Well, the one that baffled me the most, and that was just seeing his dad last night for the postseason, is why Josh Reddick is still in.
Yeah, well, you know, he was one of the few guys who got a hit last night. He was actually one for three. He got one of their three hits. So, you know, maybe he's kind of waking up or coming around. But, you know, like there's Springer who is, I think he's three for his last 30. So they're you know, while the Astros were putting up some good offensive numbers, they do have some guys who are in a hole. So, you know, then for the Dodgers, you know, now they switched over and they went with their lineup they used pretty much all through the year against right-handed pitching. Chris Taylor, of course, going to lead off in center field. Corey Seager moves up to the two hole. He's at shortstop. Justin Turner is batting third, playing third. Cody Bellinger is at first base, hitting cleanup. Yasiel Puig hits fifth in right field. Jock Peterson is sixth in left field. Austin Barnes is seventh, and he catches. Chase Utley is in tonight, playing second base and hitting eighth. And then Rich Hill hits ninth and, of course, does the pitching there. So, you know, no surprise. I mean, obviously the big thing is Peterson is in because Granderson isn't on the World Series roster. But other than that, this is kind of what you expected out of the Dodgers, right? They would go to this lineup.
Yeah, and I like the structure better with Seager up in the two. And then, you
know,
Turner, Bellinger, and Quig bumped down a notch.
You know, and then looking at the, you know, the career stats, again, there's not a big sample size. Brian McCann has the most at-bats against Hill, but only nine. He's just one for nine. And then on the Dodgers side, Utley has the most at-bats against Verlander, and it's just six at-bats. So you can't really go on career stuff. He has two for six, but, you know, that's one of those things. You know, that would be like saying Jose Altuve actually has his only hit off him is a home run. He's one for five in his career. So it's difficult to really kind of lay out any career numbers there or anything like that. It's just, you know, who's going to hit or who stays hot or how it works out. And, you know, I guess in the Astros case, it's who gets going, right? I mean, they need a guy to kind of step up and start putting up some offense, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think if, obviously, if George Springer does, it'll really light up everybody. But even Jose Altuve, he's kind of been the one who carried them, especially through the Yankee series.
Yeah, and now he did, you know, obviously Bregman got a hit last night. I mentioned Reddick. Altuve had the other Astros hit, but, you know, obviously you're not winning anything on three hits. You know, it was nice to see Corey Seager go 2-for-3. You know, that was his first game in, what, a week and a half or so coming back from that bad back. And, you know, he looked okay. I know he had that weird flip to second base, but that, I don't think that anything had anything to do with the back. It was just kind of an oops moment there where he didn't get a good turn to second and they didn't get the double play. But, you know, I think he's a big deal here, right, if he's healthy.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was a lingering injury, kind of bending over, or just kind of a sloppy play.
Yeah, it looked more just like the ball just kind of shot out of his hand funny, and he made a terrible flip there. But, you know, Kershaw got out of it. I know it was funny because for some reason, they made a big deal out of that on the morning highlights. And it was just kind of like, okay, I'm not quite sure that's as big a deal as you're making it out to be, but I guess you need a story when both pitchers are kind of rolling along. So,
yeah, well, you've got to wonder if Seager puts up, you know, good numbers tonight, if maybe he'll get a DH spot in Houston.
Yeah, you know, I know originally, you know, they were kind of talking about that to give him, I don't know, maybe give the back a little rest of not having to play defense and, you know, stuff like that. So you wonder if that's still the plan. I mean, obviously, if he shows he's completely healthy, they might not, they might not do something like that. But, you know, you just wonder, you know, obviously what they're thinking. You know, I think they need him to be healthy. So I think he's going to end up being a DH.
Yeah, well, you know, like we talked about it, you've got a pretty young, healthy team to begin with, aside from Chase Utley being kind of the old man on the team. You know, I think it would be best to preserve Seager on the bench. I guess more, you know, old man on the World Series roster.
Yeah, well, you know, you need those, you know, those veteran guys, you know, at least one of them, you know, somewhere down the road. So, you know, you have to, you know, you just got to kind of see how it works out. And, you know, I mean, he's contributed nicely. You know, luckily they don't ask him to play every day. So, you know, that's a big plus. But, you know, I guess the big thing, it seems like, you know, everybody's kind of rolling along here on is will we see Justin Verlander have a Clayton Kershaw type outing? Do you see him, you know, putting up those numbers or, you know, that kind of, you know, same kind of deal? You know, is he going to go, seven and just give up a run and keep the Astros in the game?
I mean, with the way Verlander's pitched, I don't even think he gives up a run.
And, you know, then I guess, you know, you gotta flip it. I mean, can Rich Hill match him? I mean, we know, you know, there's times he's really good. He was really good against the Cubs in, you know, a short stint, just five innings. You know, can he give the Dodgers five shutout innings tonight, do you think?
I don't know that he gives them five shutouts. I do think for the Astros, you know, yesterday was the you can kind of concede that game and, you know, forget about yesterday and really work on taking it to Rich Hill. And I think you really got to get him early in that first and second inning.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how, you know, this game kind of starts off here. You know, it's, you know, Verlander has just been so good. You know, I just wonder if sooner or later he's going to, you know, he's just going to go out and have, you know, maybe not even a rough outing, but an outing where, you know, maybe like Keuchel, you know, where he gives up three runs and you're like, oh, okay, well, no problem. Three runs is nothing. And then, you know, the team can't score, you know, and you end up losing, you know, a 3-1 game or a 3-2 game. You know, it's just kind of like, damn, that would really be a, you know, kind of a you know, a punch in the gut, more or less. So, I don't know. Would we see something like that tonight?
It's quite possible. It all depends on, I think, the handling and the pitching of Rich Hill. You know, the one thing I noticed last night is, you know, you mentioned 83 pitches for Kershaw. You figure 11 strikeouts, so you're looking at roughly 45 pitches, you know, 40-some-odd pitches through the rest of the game for the, you know, combined rest of the batters. And, you know, I think that stems to a lot of the Astros getting a little too excited last night. I mean, we saw several first pitch hits, you know, ground outs, fly outs. You know, they were really jumping on that first pitch last night.
Yeah, you know, and the Astros as a whole, I know for, you know, a while, you know, for when they were, I don't know, you want to call it bad or however you want to call it, when they were building this team, let's go with that, they were one of the bigger strikeout teams, you know, in baseball. They were always right there at the top. But, you know, this year, now that the team is kind of rounded into shape and they've, you know, I don't want to say ditched their sabermetric plan, but they tweaked it a little to go with some veteran guys. You know, I mean, you know, they went out and got a McCann. They went out and got Reddick, Carlos Beltran. You know, you can't forget those guys. You know, their strikeouts were down a little bit. I want to double check here and see where they ended up ranking as a team here. But I know they were much better than in years past. It helps if I pull the regular season one up instead. That would be much better for me. Oh, wow, here you go, Dan. Now those 11 strikeouts may even be more impressive to you. The Astros struck out the least of anybody in Major League Baseball last season.
Wait, say that again?
The Astros struck out the least of every team in Major League Baseball last season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 1,087 times. That was the lowest total out of any team. The Indians were next at 1,153. So, yeah, they didn't strike out very much during the season, and Clayton Kershaw got him for 11 last night. So, I think that kind of makes the performance even better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I know since you're wondering, Dan, it was the Milwaukee Brewers who struck out more than anybody else during the regular season, 1,571. So,
where were the Cubs in that?
Oh, the Cubs were not as high up as I thought they would be. They ended up 10th. Oddly, the Cubs were 10th. The White Sox were 11th. The Cubs were 1,401. The White Sox were 1,397, so 10 and 11 for the Chicago teams.
You know, and I have to ask, where were the Yankees at?
So, yeah, well, you know, you get 200, right? 200 plus right off the bat from Judge. Believe it or not, they were 12. Yeah,
wow.
they were 12. The Dodgers were 13th. So, yeah.
Oh, you got all the playoff teams kind of clumped together right there.
Yeah, the first playoff team you actually hit is Arizona, who was sixth. They actually struck out 1,456 times. So, you know, then, you know, Colorado rolled in at ninth. I know they were just the wild card teams, but they still count. The Cubs were the first division winner you hit at 10. And then, yeah, the Dodgers at 13, the Yankees 12, the Dodgers 13, the Twins were 15, the Nationals 17th overall, and then the Red Sox 23, so they were way down the list. And then the Indians and the Astros were 29th and 30th. So, again, you know, it's another kind of situation of where a team that doesn't strike out too much is in the World Series. So, you know, I know we've had that talk. Oop. See if that fixes it. Sorry, I didn't know you dropped off there for a second.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, yeah, you know, I mean, it's kind of interesting that the less the Astros struck out, the better the team got, huh?
Yeah.
So.
But they don't matter.
No, it's weird that they keep talking about how they, you know, strikeouts don't matter, you know, it's no big deal, but yet here we are looking at a team that we've been waiting to get to the World Series for probably 3 years now. And, you know, those other 2 years were right at the top of the board strikeout-wise. And, you know, now this year they find a way to make contact, put the ball in play, strike out less than anybody else in baseball, and, hey, they're in the World Series. How the heck did that happen?
Well, wasn't that the kind of the same scenario with 2015 in the Royals?
Yeah, they were the team that struck out the least. You know, I think the year that the Royals and the Giants met, when the Giants won, I believe they were the two teams, they were 29th and 30th in strikeouts. So, you know, it's just so odd that, you know, they keep saying, well, you know, this doesn't matter, strikeouts don't matter, blah, blah, blah. But yet these teams that don't strike out seem to win. You know, and you kind of wonder when somebody's going to notice the correlation there, or, you know, I mean, I'm guessing maybe they don't want to admit it because, you know, it would mean, say, you know, their sabermetric garbage was wrong. But yeah, I mean, you know, just sooner or later, it's kind of like, oh, okay, when do we see this?
Well, you know, that's kind of like firing your pitching coach when your team doesn't hit.
Yeah, so, you know, but I think we all understand, you know, like I know we went over that a little yesterday or whatever, Monday, I think. We all kind of understand why that one happened, yeah. But no, it makes perfect sense. You know, I mean, that's one of those goofy things, you know, you just kind of, you know, you kind of look at it and it's like, okay, well, we're not striking out 1,500 times a year. And wait, now we're in the World Series. Wait, how did that add up? that's not right. So, you know, you just have to wonder if, you know, there's some sabermetric guy somewhere tearing his hair out because it kind of went that way.
Yeah, well, strikeouts only matter in fantasy pitching.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's you know, that's definitely part of the deal. I mean, you can understand, you know, sabermetrics being a big part of fantasy because, you know, we're talking about guys, you know, who never, you know, either never played the game or never went very far in the game. So you know, this is kind of their way to get in on it. You know, and all, you know, you just need a, you know, you need that one front office guy to bite. And I think the Astros were actually the, you know, the first team to bite and really, really fully embrace sabermetrics. But again, you know, like I said, when you start looking at their lineup that got them here, it didn't end up going, you know, the way they had kind of planned to do it. So, you know, if you want to call them a sabermetric team, that's great, but they're not truly a full-on 100% sabermetric team anymore.
Well, no, and the Royals blew that one up in 2015, too. As did the Giants in 2014.
Yeah, it was funny. Those teams were the biggest, you know, probably the farthest away from being sabermetrically relevant than any other teams. And, you know, they win the two World Series. And, you know, even like last year, I know, you know, Joe Maddon has embraced a lot of the sabermetrics when it comes to piecing his batting order together. You know, and I still claim, he's going to cost, it won't be this year, but somewhere down the line, he's going to cost Chris Bryant an MVP hitting second. But, you know, that's between them. That's not my issue there. So, but other than that, yeah, they're not a full on sabermetric team either, you know, and slowly but surely, I wish these guys who would continue to preach it would understand that you need a mix to really be successful.
Yeah. Well, and for Joe Maddon, everything that's done in the regular season gets thrown out the window for postseason.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, you know, like here we're looking at, you know, two teams that are, you know, staying with exactly, you know, you go with the one that brought you to the dance, you know, and they're both staying on track with that. And, you know, that's, you know, obviously it's working. They're here in the World Series, and I don't know, you know, why or how, or, you know, you decide to make it, you know, make a change all of a sudden. You got this far, and now it's like, nah, I'm going to do something else. But, you know, that fits into his quirky style, and that's apparently what they like of him. All right, well, looking at tonight, you know, and obviously we get the day off tomorrow. We're going to go back to Houston. So what do you think? Do we get the series tied? Or are you saying that the Dodgers are going to be up 2-1 headed into Houston? So, all right, well, we might have to wait for Dan to return to make his pick. So we will see. You know, again, hopefully it's another good game. You know, it's no fun when the World Series gets to be blowouts or anything like that, but you just kind of wonder, you know, and I think obviously the biggest concerns for anything here kind of point to Rich Hill. You know, and it's just, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, his career has been so up and down, and I know he kind of remade himself after, what, 33 or 4 or something like that. You know, and his career has really taken off. Of course, he still has been injury prone. You know, even this year, I don't believe he made but 20-plus starts. Let's see if we can find his stats here real quick. I'm sure I can bing them and hunt down the baseball reference site to get what he's done there. But yeah, you know, he is 37 now. He made 25 starts this year for the Dodgers. So a few more than I thought. 12-8 with a 3.32 ERA, 135 2/3 innings. So You know, he just doesn't, you know, doesn't throw, you know, he just doesn't pitch a lot. He's not going to rack up a lot of innings. He's not going to, you know, do any of that stuff for you. It's just he's not that guy. You know, let me see. I wanted to check here. I know, you know, he went five innings against the Cubs in game five. He did he pick up the win? Yeah, I think he did pick up the win. But I was looking for he only threw 79 pitches in five innings. So it's, you know, he didn't make, you know, now he did make a appearance against the Diamondbacks. He made a start there. And he only went four innings there and ended up pitching or throwing 78 pitches. He gave up a few more runs there. He only gave up one to the Cubs. He gave up two to the Diamondbacks. But again, you know, we're not looking at a guy who's going to log a lot of innings. His longest postseason outing was against the Cubs last year when he went six innings. Let's see if I can grab his season game log here real quick, and we'll see see if or what he racked up through the season here. Let's see. I've got 3 7-inning starts. Here you go. He's got one complete game, believe it or not, against the Pirates. And oddly, he lost that game 1-0 through 99 pitches. But yeah, that's the only one. Otherwise, there's 4 7-inning starts. So 5 of his 25 starts, he went 7 innings or more. So you, again, you know, we know what we're going to get tonight out of Rich Hill. It's not going to be a surprise when, you know, that second time he comes up to the plate, you know, obviously depending on how the Dodgers at bats are going, you know, that he's pinch hit for and he's out of the game and we see him for 5 innings or, you know, 6 innings. It's just the way, you know, it's just the way it is. It's just the way it's going to work out for him. There's no, you know, no real way around it. You know, it is what you get. You know, he's not, I'm trying to think what would be the best way. You know, he's not a, you know, I don't know, you want to call him an iron horse for, you know, the old sake term there. You know, he's not a workhorse pitcher. He's not Justin Verlander. You know, he's the new style, you know, of kind of protected starter. That, you know, this is what these guys do. They go out, they try to give you 5 or 6 innings. You know, and again, that's, you know, that's how baseball has changed when it comes to pitching. You don't see, you know, a multitude of complete games. I mean, you know, there's not, you know, there's not going to be guys getting double-digit complete games. I don't even know when the last time that happened was, you know, in a regular season. I wonder, can I Bing something like that? Will it tell me complete games by season or something like that to find out the leaders? Let's see if this works for me. We'll give this a shot here. Yeah. Oh, here you go. the National League leader in complete games. All you needed was 2. Yeah. 4 guys threw 2 complete games in the National League this year. Max Scherzer, Carlos Martinez were 2 of them. The other 2 were Ivan Nova and Clayton Richard. So, yes, Clayton Richard was a complete game leader this year. In the American League, you at least needed 5. It was Corey Kluber and Irvin Santana. So, yeah, how about that? what I was looking for here, the last time it took double digits to lead in complete games, James Shields had 11 in 2011 when he was still with Tampa Bay. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, but, yeah, then there's a big gap after that.
His season didn't kind of fall apart.
Yeah, there's a big gap after that. You go from 2011 to 1999 when Randy Johnson had 12 complete games. So, you know, it's definitely a, you know, a big reach. Here you go. You got, were you born in 1986? You know, Fernando Valenzuela completed 20 games in 1986, And Bert Blyleven completed 24 games in 1985. Wow. Imagine that now.
Impossible.
Yeah. I was just saying Rich Hill made 24 starts the entire season. How would it be if 24 of his games were complete? So, yeah.
I mean, I had a little bit of Fernando mania. You know, it was past the you know, start of it.
Yeah, he was all the rage there for quite a while. So, but yeah, I meant to ask you before you had to disappear there. I want to get your kind of pick here. Are we going back to Houston 1-1 behind Verlander, or you think the Dodgers can find a way to get a win here?
I'm just going to stick with to my guns and go with the Dodgers. My wife has the Astros all the way.
All right. Well, now I need your explanation with this, because I am completely baffled by this story. I don't know if you saw or not, but Dustin Pedroia is going to need knee surgery. You know, he had some injuries throughout the year, and it's turning out that he's going to need a knee surgery to clean this, you know, clean up whatever his problem was. What I can't figure out here, Dan, and you gotta be able to explain this to me. They said that he will be out 7 months. Okay, Dan, I've had 5 of these, and I don't know if I've been out a total of 7 months. Is it a gold knee? What are they doing? You know, what the hell are they doing to his knee that the rehab time is 7 months?
They don't want him to go up against Manny Machado again.
I mean, do we have that? Wait, I'd have to go find it. But yeah, I mean, I saw this and I was like, I don't understand why it's a freaking 7 month recovery. You know, and obviously they have the time. I mean, it's October, so you know what? November, December, January, March, April, May. You know, he'll be rolling back, ready to go about the start of the season. You know, or a little after, because what, the season starts in April next year.
Yeah.
They described it as cartilage restoration procedure. Oh, where the hell was that when I needed cartilage in my knees? What the hell? But yeah, they say approximately 7 months. And I'm baffled that, you know, this recovery is just so long. I don't get it. You have to help me out here. You were a personal trainer. What's the deal?
Well, I wasn't an orthopedic or surgeon. But I guess my first question is, are you going to Dr. Andrews? And then I think the other part of it is when I'd rather overestimate. You know, because if he comes back in May, early May, or, you know, the end of April, you know, that's a better highlight. But would you rather him come back completely ready and then in the warmer month? Or would you want to keep him out of April and May, which may not be so great? I mean, I went in May. Did we go in Boston in May or April? Oh, I went in April, and, you know, we got lucky. It was really nice. It's extremely nice there, but I also think the week before it snowed.
First, I can tell you that the surgery was done by Dr. Riley Williams III at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York. Secondly, I believe I'm really just jealous at the fact that he's given 7 months to rehab, and I was rushed back to my job, and I'm not a professional baseball player. So I honestly believe that might be part of my problem. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just kind of kind of how things work out. But there were a couple other things I wanted to get your take on today amid the sports world, even though I know you and I are fully immersed in baseball. I don't know if you you managed to catch this one, but did you see Cam Newton storm out of his press conference by any chance today?
No. I was tied up, so I didn't catch I didn't do a whole lot of updating on Bing today.
Yeah. He got up to the podium and he just kind of has a, you know, he has that look on his face where you can just tell he's probably not in a good mood. And I believe he asks, I don't know if he asks for questions or if they ask one right away. And it's about the offense's ability to consistently get what the reporter describes as chunks of yardage. You can tell Cam is very frustrated by this question, so he doesn't even really answer it. He just says, next question. And then he just kind of walked out while somebody else was asking a question. And it was just another kind of oddly strange Cam Newton press conference. I was just disappointed he didn't have a hoodie on. It looks like he's just wearing a long sleeve t-shirt. But yeah, it was just kind of humorous. And now I mentioned, I heard a couple other reporters on television mention that they possibly believe there's something going on with Cam and this reporter, and they may not have a very positive relationship, and that's why he reacted kind of like he did. But yeah, I just thought it was really strange. And I don't know. I mean, I get it. They just got beat by an incredibly bad Chicago Bears team and could only manage a field goal. So it doesn't really seem like that bad of a question. Do you think maybe he's just having a bad day?
Well, first, I was going to ask you before you threw it out there if he was wearing a hoodie. And I think, yeah, I mean, if you're not having a bad day after losing to the Bears by just with only getting a field goal, then I think you need to reevaluate his choice of playmaking. But if I were the media down there, I know they're not going to do this, and you got to remain professional. But in a professional manner, I would pull all my male reporters and just put all, each station, yeah, newspaper, whoever, and just send my female reporters.
Yeah, I definitely would have done that already. If I was a newspaper editor or whatever, there I'd have been like, hey. Yeah, send all the women to this.
Yeah. We're going to give you male-esque questions to ask. Just here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the he's got to do something to reestablish himself. I mean, you mentioned after he made that comment about that reporter asking him whatever the question was. I can't remember off the top of my head the aggressiveness or whatever about the question, losing his sponsorship or his what his deal with the yogurt company. And I mean, ever since the hoodie incident, it's just been kind of a slow decline. And you don't wish negativity on the guy, but you've got to wonder if that was his climax, and we're just seeing sadly, the destruction or the downside of Cam Newton. Maybe Colin Kaepernick can take his job.
Yeah, I know, he did have the off-season shoulder issue. He should be fully recovered from that by now, though. That shouldn't be an issue. And I mean, yeah, there's no way to put it, man. He looked bad on Sunday against the Bears. I don't get to see a ton of him But, you know, obviously I got to see the entire game because it was the only game on in, you know, in our market. And, I mean, he missed some wide-open guys and just made some terrible throws. And, you know, this is a guy I believe didn't. I thought he won an MVP or he was close to being an MVP. I thought the year they went to the Super Bowl, you know, and you just wonder what the heck happened to him.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you know, I mean,
part of it's with those interceptions, the first one especially, you're like, you can kind of chalk it up because it was a tip. And, you know, once the ball gets pushed off of, you know, bounced off of one guy's hands to the other, there's really not a whole lot you could do on that one. And I thought we were kind of getting some of it, getting back Cam Newton in the second half, but it's a horrible performance on their end. And they're supposed to be a championship caliber team. Or what I thought was supposed to be.
Yeah, well, you know, and every year, you know, it's the same thing with them, you know, and I get it. Okay, you lost Greg Olsen. That's a huge loss.
Yeah.
But you're looking at a team, you know, they draft Christian McCaffrey. You know, they add him to Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin. You know, Jonathan Stewart is still a very solid running back. You have all these weapons around Cam. You, for whatever reason, they can't put it together. And I could understand, okay, you know, maybe they're not as good as an upper echelon team. I would give them that. But to come into Chicago and literally just get embarrassed like they did. And now the scary thing is they're 4-3 and they're still only a half a game, you know, out of their division lead. But, you know, I mean, you have to wonder going forward the way they got beat by, you know, a Bears team. I mean, unless the Bears have the best defense in the NFL, you know, you don't get shut down like that. And, you know, now they got to go to Tampa, who's been another disappointing team.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what the hell to expect. And, of course, this is what makes it so difficult to, you know, to pick frickin' games this year is you look at these matchups and go, well, okay, both these teams have sucked lately. Which one is going to suck more today? So, literally you could just, you know, throw your picks in a hat and see what comes out. But, you know, that's the NFL, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, even when it came to Sunday's pick, you know, I'm not going to knock you for picking the Panthers to win because when this schedule was released, we both would have looked at it and gone, yeah, that's Panthers win. It just, the last couple of weeks with the way the Panthers have been, I just kind of like, well, I haven't been doing so good with my picks anyway, so let me just go let me go with the Bears. And I really didn't think it was going to. I honestly thought everyone was going to pick the Panthers. So I figured, well, instead of keeping the curse alive, you know, either the three of you will pick the Panthers and I'll be the odd man out and lose, or I'll be the lucky man to win. And I'll be Mr. Fantasy with the Bears too. I can imagine he's treating Trubisky Kool-Aid where I was just kind of like, let's just throw it to them because their defense has been playing a little better, which I added Jackson to my team because my defensive guy was out. But, you know, he's not going to score no 275-yard touchdowns this week. But, you know, it was kind of a shot in the dark. Like you said, I mean, realistically, this should have been hands down the Panthers game. And while they may not be the Patriots, I still thought, but I'm kind of losing that faith. And this team being one of those scary playoff teams where when it comes to the playoffs, I think if you're going up against them, you're not really afraid of them anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been such a weird season for Carolina. I mean, you're looking at a team that goes into New England and beats the Patriots, you know, and then they manage to get by the Lions. Okay. They got beat by the Eagles, but the Eagles are turning out to be one of the better teams. Then you go on the road to Chicago, and you score 3 points, you know, it's like, okay, 3 points, great. I don't get it. It's just kind of like, how did you manage just 3 freaking points? You know, I don't care how good the Bears defense is. It's not that good.
No, I mean, and if you think about it, without those two interceptions, it would have been an overtime game with 3-3. But the way
how frightening is that?
Yeah, you know, it would have almost been as great as the Titans game. But with the way the Panthers were playing with Cam Newton, you might as well just send him back to the hotel and put him on the plane before the game ended.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's one of those. I mean, you gotta wonder. I mean, is there a quarterback controversy in Carolina? You know, are there people going, "Hey, we want to see Derek Anderson start"?
I don't think so.
You know, yeah, it's just kind of, you know, just it's kind of one of those. You know, one of those things you wonder, because, you know, that's all it was here in Chicago. I mean, the minute there was an issue, it was like, oh, well, you know, we've got to have Trubisky in the, you know, in here. And, he's done nothing, but, you know, that they've won. So as long as they win, he's going to get all the credit in the world, even though his main job is just really to turn around and hand off the football. I don't know.
Well, there was someone this morning who I heard say, and I thought this was pretty comical. They're like, can the Bears make it to the playoffs with a quarterback who throws for like 600 yards the whole season?
Yeah, the Bears aren't going to the playoffs. They're not going to beat the Vikings or the Lions. I get it. It's been a fun story that, you know, they've managed to beat the Panthers, and they beat the Ravens, but yeah, I'm thinking that's probably the end of it. So, you know. So we'll have to see. I don't even know who the Bears play this week. I didn't even look ahead. You know, I'm still trying to figure out who the heck I'm going to pick tomorrow, because it's the Ravens and the frickin' Dolphins, and there's no Jay Cutler, but that may be a good thing. And Joe Flacco's been horrible. I have zero idea what the heck. I may just put a name in a hat, you know, and or flip a coin or do something, because, you know, it, you know, right? Who knows? You know, but obviously,
yeah, well, I mean,
have the opportunity to discuss that tomorrow. We shall see. Of course, I doubt I'll have Mr. Fantasy's pick, but Stu did already send me his, and of course, you know, we'll have Dan in mind while we're live here on the air tomorrow. Right. But we'll see if Mr. Fantasy can the game actually start. All right, well, the music needs time for Dan and I to head out for the thing. But again, we'll be back tomorrow at 5:30 to do this again. You know the deal while we're gone, though. Get over to sportstimeradio.com. Check out the new blog that went up this morning. Follow the link to that page and give us play. Also, Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which, of course, is Sports Time Radio. Dan and I down on Twitter, like, we'll go ahead and talk to you on there. We have no problems with that. We're not like Mr. Fantasy. So I'm a big thank you for you to listen live. It's super cool what you did that for us. But don't forget, you can find the podcast anytime you want over on tunein.com.